Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
You know, we thought the NFC South would be sort of open season, but it sounds like with just a bunch of teams that everybody beats down on, it sounds like we're wrong on that front. The NFC South has a couple teams that are well in the mix of playoff teams. Let's put it that way, not contention, but playoff teams. Russo and Rizzo live here on ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo now behind the glass. Christian Catt, of course, as high school game day tonight.
This ought to be interesting.
This will be interesting.
This will be very interesting, folks.
C-Cat, you'll hear him on the call tonight with, I believe, Jamel Murray, the head coach of Atlantic football. Dr. Joaquin Garcia playing host to Wellington, 6:30 on that. Mike and I will be in the studio for that for the pregame and postgame show. But nonetheless, Thursday Night Football came and went yesterday. Week 5 officially underway, a 36-30 victory for the Atlanta Falcons over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kirk Cousins, a 509-yard explosion. Baker Mayfield still played a good game. 180 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, high completion percentage. Just, it's a tale of offenses. Who got the ball last? The overtime rules, of course, favored the Falcons. They went right down the field. And I think this has been a strange resurgence of the NFC South based on what we've seen. But it's Russo and Rizzo live here on ESPN 106.3. Got a lot of stuff going on this weekend in terms of events, but join Bud Light and the ESPN West Palm ESPN West Palm Street team, at Bonefish Max in Port St. Lucie this Sunday, October 6th from 1 to 3. Watch the Miami Dolphins take on the New England Patriots, and you'll get a chance to win Bud Light prizes or qualify for Miami Dolphins tickets. Bonefish Max is going to have drink specials, including $15.99 buckets of Bud Light, and Michelob Ultra. You must be 21 or older to participate. Southern Eagle reminds you to please drink responsibly. We'll see you at Bonefish Max on this Sunday from 1 to 3. Don't miss that. Mike, the NFC South, I think if you asked us, 5-6 weeks ago, we would have told you, hey, if we're going to rank them, you're going to have the AFC North up there, you're going to have the NFC North up there, and I think the NFC South would be damn near the bottom. Now, all of a sudden, there's a bit of a reconsideration that has to occur.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, I like the. I think they're top-heavy. I think they're top-heavy with the Buccaneers and Atlanta. I'm not there with New Orleans. I mean, that Clint Kubiak offense was unbelievable for the first 2 weeks of the season, but I feel like that's kind of taken
jury's
a bad
still out
seat.
Of them.
Yeah, and that Eagle game specifically at home, I thought they'd find a way to win that game in a close game. They weren't able to. And then, you know, obviously the Panthers being dreadful. I think both of those teams
Buccaneers and Falcons are definitely two
right,
playoff teams.
And that's what I was about to say. That's where I was going next. I think Tampa Bay and Atlanta are probably going to make the playoffs, especially with how topsy-turvy the NFC has been. I thought the NFC East were going to get two playoff teams in Dallas and the Eagles. That could very well still happen. And I don't want to get the Eagle fans all angry at me, but I question if the Eagles can make the playoffs. I question if they can make the playoffs at this point with a couple of the things that we've seen. So, and then Dallas, you know, I didn't necessarily agree with them, but we had Chris Canty, you know, our very own Chris Canty of Unsportsmanlike, talking about tanking. And the Cowboys tanking, which I completely disagreed with, but they're not playing up to par either. The 49ers, you know, they started the season slow this year. The Lions have turned the ship around, but they you know, they lost a game earlier. They had some questions, I feel like, with Jared Goff turning the ball over a few times. But the NFC is a little bit wide open. And you could kind of say the same thing about the AFC, too, with how bad the AFC North has been.
I think it's just, but the problem is they have the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are always that cloud
right.
over everybody
else. Right, and I was a huge fan of Buffalo going into the year, and I know a lot of people at our station, Colin, weren't. I'm not saying you weren't, but, Theo was waxing poetically about the Jets. There are a lot of people who are very high on the Jets. I still have to remind everyone that the Bills have Josh Allen, and the Bills have won that division a crazy number of times in recent years. So I think when you look at the AFC, it's the Chiefs, it's the Bills, and then after that, a whole lot of teams that are similar. I mean, the Bengals, they finally won a couple, you know, some games. The Ravens seem like that they've kind of turned the corner a little bit with that big win against the Bills on Monday Night Football. But I'm not ready to say that they're on the level of the Buffalo Bills or the Kansas City Chiefs at this point.
We'll dive into this a bit later in the show, but breaking news on the MLB side of things. It has been announced officially by the Mets that Kodai Senga, the Japanese pitcher,
wow,
is not only back, but starting game one against the Philadelphia Phillies, has pitched one game all year. July 26th, went out after 5 1/3 inning with a calf strain. We haven't seen him since. That is one start all year. He is going to be taking on the Phillies 4 o'clock on Fox.
Who did this for the Rangers last year? Scherzer?
Yeah, Scherzer got back in the mix.
I like Senga. I think he's got elite stuff. I think
this is
spin
risky.
It.
It's risky.
This is very risky. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it personally if I were in that. Kyle, is this a desperate move?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I think this is where, I mean, the Mets are the Mets. Are we banking on our own mojo a little bit?
That's what I mean. We talk
this
so much.
Let's ride on the magic.
We talk so much about theme. We talk so much about mojo. Is this going against that? Like, there's an old saying that I learned from Terry Francona. You know, you ride with the horses that got you there. Senga isn't one of the horses that got him to this point. So that's why I question it a little bit.
Second season in the bigs, only pitched one, but was decent in that start against July 26th. It's hard to get a gauge. But Kodai Senga will be starting game one for the Mets after they went with David Peterson, who would have been slated as the starter in game one yesterday to close the game up 4-2. He only pitched like 7 or 8 times, but nonetheless, I think they want to give him that extra day's rest. This is a fascinating, fascinating move by the Mets. You're right. In terms of stuff, he's probably the top of their rotation in terms of top upside. And he was great last
year. What's that, ghost ball?
It's
what is he called?
The ghost fork.
It's awesome. I mean, he's got elite fastball stuff, too.
This is interesting because the Phillies now have had a week off. They had no idea that he was back in the mix here. And all of a sudden, you got to prepare for a guy you haven't seen all year. You don't know how healthy he is. You don't know how well he'll pitch. But if the Mets are going to do anything here, they're banking on their own magic, and for better or worse. They could have went Trevor McGill and then survived through a bullpen game and tried to scratch and claw their way through. I'm not sure if that was the right move, especially against Wheeler. Maybe they're just trying to harness, control the magic and direct it. They haven't been able to control it after Monday and Thursday. Control and harness the magic.
Colin, I'm not bullpen day guy in the playoffs.
Not when you played this much.
And even if you do have a good bullpen, I still, like, you're really taxing your arms. God forbid you have a bullpen game, and then the next game your starting pitcher gets shelled in the first or the second inning. You're really taxing, that bullpen.
888-760-3776. Kodai Senga officially back for the Mets. Will be starting game one against the Philadelphia Phillies. Hasn't pitched since July 26th. Has 5 innings on the year. Carlos Mendoza and the Mets, who won dramatic fashion yesterday, going with Kodai Senga. Fascinating move. A risky move. But that makes that game a whole lot more interesting.
It is, and you talked about magic with the Mets. I think Pete Alonso was at bat with Harry Potter's wand last night. I mean, what a home run. What a series, too. You had the Chirio night on game two.
And game one, when they had the five, there was a back and forth game through the 5th inning, and then they pulled Peralta early, and all of a sudden they get killed. That a fascinating series. I thought the Mets were dead. I thought they were so dead.
You think Pat Murphy kind of bottled a couple of things last night?
I think he was fine in game two because that pinch hit to Mitchell instead of Hoskins got them at homer. And then yesterday, going Peralta was the right move. Any manager in baseball probably would have done something similar. And he went with Devin Williams, the best closer in baseball, maybe other than the Class A. But the best closer, probably most consistent in the bigs. This is not a Pat Murphy problem.
I agree, and we talked about that. Colin, I remember talking on one of the final segments of the show with you, like, we trust Williams more so than what the Mets have to close games out. Sometimes the guys that got you there just don't pan out.
Wow.
And how about that?
And Williams was good post-game, too.
He
took a lot of accountability.
Time.
Good post-game.
Big time. And you have to be in a situation like that.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I can't believe that the Mets are doing this stuff. This is going to be a fascinating series. John O'Terry, one of our MCs in the office here, is a big Philadelphia Phillies fan.
He had his rally rag over his desk today.
And he's screaming that, you know, he's not worried about the Mets, and you know, I'm not nervous. They're going to blow the doors off them. The Phillies are so good. The Mets have a storyline attached to them that is dangerous. It happened with the D-backs. Might happen again with the Mets.
A lot of divisional matchups, right? My Guardians got the Tigers. We got that
and
one.
And then you got the Padres, Dodgers. Yeah. And then you got the Phillies, Mets.
Honest to God, is this Dave Roberts' biggest nightmare facing off, which I think is one of the hottest teams in baseball with the Padres?
Yeah,
it's a nightmare.
Yeah, but and the Padres are not afraid of them either.
And they beat them. Yeah. The last time they played them in the playoffs,
2 years ago,
they beat them.
Yep. So this is going to be a fascinating weekend of baseball. It all goes off tomorrow. I like the day, and we'll get into this a little later, but do you think the MLB mishandled how they scheduled with no games tonight?
I think so.
You think so?
What are we watching tonight?
I like the empty day of anticipation. We're watching Joaquin Garcia Wellington tonight.
Correct. Hey, man, we're here all night, baby. We can't wait. We're pulling all night. I brought my sleeping bag. Intern Colton over here brought his as well. We're having a party here.
So that's why I'm okay with it. On top of that, I like the day in anticipation. This is the Mets day.
And I think college football, what is it, Michigan State and Oregon tonight? We have a Friday night matchup, believe it or not, as well. We got the Ducks and Sparty. So maybe they didn't want to compete with college football. I don't know.
Kodai Senga hasn't pitched 3 months. Wow. But, you know, when he's on it, when he has his stuff rolling, one of the more talented upside pitchers in professional baseball. But it's sort of an unprecedented move to bring him back for game one like this. A guy with not necessarily the postseason experience of a la Scherzer or Kershaw, which has been done in the past, or Strasburg. But this is more so, this is a guy who's in a lot of ways completely unproven in a big game. But I think the Mets had their backs against the wall a little bit. Diaz went deep in multiple games this series and went deep over the weekend. I think they wanted to give him some rest. They need to preserve their bullpen a little bit.
And is this like a move to like kind of throw a wrench?
Probably.
You know what I mean? Throw a wrench into the plan of what they were going
to
do?
I really think there's something to the good luck charm. The Mets
That's
have
what
a,
I mean.
I saw the pumpkin that Pete Alonso has that he got from Milwaukee last weekend. That's another good luck charm they have. They have 1,000 of those things. I think they're just trying to maximize the luck. They're using it as fuel.
And they've seen other wildcard teams of Christmas Ghost Pass in the playoffs have success. And I think they understand that they could easily make a run all the way if they play their cards right. I think more or less the Senga move is, here you go, Philly, deal with this. We have no idea what this guy is going to do. Yeah. You don't either. Best of luck.
I agree. And if Senga comes out there and screws the pooch and is terrible, honestly, I'm okay with it.
And
because they're going against Wheeler anyway.
Agreed.
So Wheeler's, if you could get a scoreless through six or, you know, one run through six, you're taking that.
Do the Phillies have the best 1-3 in the playoffs with Nola, Wheeler, and Suarez? Is that the best?
It probably used to be the Padres, but with this Joe Musgrove injury, now they're going to turn to Darvish.
It's not that you hate Darvish. You don't believe in Darvish anymore.
I love Darvish.
You don't believe in Darvish.
I've watched this movie before. Darvish is terrible in a big game. I am not giving him the ball.
Michael King. How about King?
Terrific. So this is good. Zach Wheeler, Kodai Senga tomorrow. That game's got a lot of juice. And we didn't even bring up what we saw yesterday in terms of how impactful that game was. One of the biggest wins in Mets franchise in the last 15 years for the entire franchise. Two of the biggest wins happened on Monday and happened on Thursday.
Right.
With that come-from-behind win over the Braves in the top of the ninth with Francisco Lindor. And basically the same exact thing, but in a playoff setting and coming from behind victory on Pete Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
Did Pete Alonso earn himself another contract with the Mets? Did he become a Met for life with that hit? We continue the conversation next. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Mets ace Kodai Senga is officially back. He will be starting game one against the Philadelphia Phillies at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia tomorrow, 4 o'clock on Fox. Senga, 5 1/3 innings pitched all throughout 2024. That is it. Hasn't pitched since July 26th. making a triumphant return. You can't imagine they're going to go to him deep. But if they could get 50-something pitches out of him, what a gutsy move by Carlos Mendoza and the Mets and co. Fascinating move by the Mets. They're going him against Wheeler. Game one. Mets yesterday, of course, one of the more intense victories that we have seen in quite some time on the postseason front with a come-from-behind victory. Pete Alonso, a three-run shot in the top of the ninth to take the lead. Unbelievable. Kodai Senga pitching for the Mets here. He had a 2.98 ERA in 2023, his rookie season, went 12-7. This year, technically got the win, but, I mean, only five innings pitched. This is the Mets. This characterizes their year. Here's what the Mets have been: a terrible start. They had we had Steve Phillips on, former Mets GM, earlier in the week, and he told us the Mets, you know, in May when everybody was saying the clubhouse was completely split and it's the worst team ever, they turned it around, been the best team in baseball since July. The amount of resilience, come from behind, scrapping together wins, tight playoff race, edging teams out, intense. The game against Philly last weekend, closing out that, was a very, very intense matchup. Getting the most out of their guys, Iglesias making plays. The Mets are chaos. It's almost chaos sprinkled with some destiny.
And it fits the mold of being a Met fan, right? Doesn't this run fit the mold of being a Met fan your whole life? You know what? Let's put our shoes, Colin, into a... You're 22, I'm 29. Let's put our shoes into a Met fan that's our age. Their whole life, right? They've seen two runs in the playoffs, realistically. They've seen two runs. You know, the year they went to the World Series with Cespedes. They had a couple of good years, I feel like, with David Wright and company. But this is the magic that you need in order for the Mets to win something. You know, you've had to deal with the evil empire that is the New York Yankees. Like, let's call it for what it is, and I'm going to make some Mets fans upset probably. The Mets are the little brother to the Yankees. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
The Mets are the little brother to the Yankees. This is a chance to be with the big dogs and to possibly go on a run. Now, I know Yankee fans are counting their chickens a little bit before they hatch, I think, seeing the whole AL Central thing. And Colin, you had the numbers yesterday. What were the Yankees? 24-7? I'm shooting from the hip. Yeah. 24-7 against the Central. I mean, how can't you count your chickens before they hatch? But this run the Mets are making is so New York Met fan-like, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I would like to see them go on a run. I would like to see them go all the way. I don't want to see the Dodgers.
We're in it.
Brother,
we're here.
Brother, I don't want to see the Dodgers. I certainly don't want to see Philly fans be happy. That is one of the worst things. People are going to start taking their clothes off in the streets of Philadelphia and jumping on light poles. It's what those crazy people do.
What's good is on the NL side of things, at the very least, you got a big team that one of the four big teams are going to advance. And that's...
But is it this?
Yeah, that's the theme. There's something there.
This is the way they need to win.
The big market, the big franchises are the ones that haven't played in a week. That makes it interesting. All of a sudden, you have too much time off, a la last year where three out of four lost. Are the bye teams, are they going to be in their own head a little bit? Now, all of a sudden, you throw another wrench in the mix with the Mets. Everybody knows they have mojo. And now you're throwing their ace, their guy who has their best stuff, but hasn't pitched basically all year. To me, this is mind games. This is playing into the chaos. And they're embracing the unpredictability of the Mets season, the resilience of the Mets season, thinking that they could scratch and claw their way against Wheeler.
Yep.
So I think that's probably part of the reason, because Zach Wheeler is Zach Wheeler and as good as he is. Maybe this is like, all right, well, the odds are against us to begin with. We might as well take a shot in the dark and not waste him in a game where we have, you know, somebody else that's a little more hittable, Nola or Suarez or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So because of that, I understand it from a tactical perspective. But the idea that they're going to give him the ball to start on the bump in Philly is fascinating.
Let me ask you this, because we talked about the mojo. I just got done explaining, in order for the Mets to win a series and go on a run, they have to do stuff like this. That's the theme that this Mets team has to do. Let's flip it on over to the Phillies. We've seen the Mets get the timely hits with Pete Alonso. We've seen the Mets get the timely hit with Francisco Lindor.
Just in time, too.
Okay, exactly. They have the mojo, and they have proved that they could hit these big home runs or whatever it may be, then get these big runs late in games. Do you trust Bryce Harper on the other end? Do you trust Nicholas Castellanos? Do you trust Babe Schwarber over there with the Phillies?
What's nice with the Phillies is they have a lot of proven postseason players. They have a lot of proven commodities and assets, especially in that lineup, that have been successful in the postseason. And it's a matter, and they have about three, four guys where they've been up and down all year, and it's a matter of them getting hot. Guys like Bohm and Stott and Castellanos. But guys like Harper are going to be in the mix consistently. And so because of that front, I think,
Harper's been a little up and down, though.
Yeah, but
this year specifically, that's why I asked.
But he's a good postseason performer
for
the most part.
Agreed.
Now the question is, are the Mets and the Phillies, with this series, the Phillies are well-rounded, probably the most well-rounded team of the field in terms of everything. They have a good starting rotation, they have a good lineup.
To your point, I think for like 3 months we've known the Phillies were going to be in this position.
Right, and I think this is now a situation where all of a sudden you get the scrappy little brother complex, chaotic, embrace it, a lot to prove, almost nothing to lose type of team in the Mets in the mix, and are they trying to play into being Destiny's team a little too much? You understand? To follow what I'm saying,
the
Mets have had that natural luck, but for at least through game two and I would say 8 innings of game three last night, the Mets looked absolutely dead in the water. They looked dead. I was ready to pinch hit Alonso. That's how bad I thought he was.
I don't think so.
Are they playing into it?
They're playing into
it. To a fault.
No, this is how the Mets need to win. I don't know how many times I need to explain this. The Yankees are the Yankees. They have the players. They have the money. This is a Mets team that just sold everything that's not named Francisco Lindor. They sold. And what's been the topic of conversation with Pete Alonso? To rewind to my Peoria days, right? We covered the Cubs. I can't tell you how many times Cubby fans thought they were getting Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso has been the talk of conversation at the trade deadline and free agency for years now. Colin, the Mets need to win like this because it's Mets-like. This is how they need to win. They need the magic. They need the mojo. And in my opinion, it's them buying into each other. It's them buying into each other and getting an identity. The identity is, we might be out of it, but we're never dead. We're never dead. Don't stop until the very end. And that's been the theme for this Mets team. I'm here for it. I'm here for the late game home runs. I'm here for the late game magic. Ride it all the way to the World Series. If you're a Met fan, this is good. This is what you want because this is how the Mets need to win. They're not going to win having the most loaded roster and the most highest paid players. They could have done that. They tried to do that. Guess what? It failed. Now they got a team. They got guys who actually want to be there, and they're bought in.
It's going to be an important matchup now, and I think, to your point, you're right. The Mets need to harness this, but I don't know if the Mets have let this come naturally to this point. It's come by
Brother,
fluke.
It's come naturally because...
But now hasn't it because you're sticking Senga in there. If he comes in and gets bombed, this would be very Mets.
I told you what this is.
This would be very Mets if he comes in and gets bombed immediately.
I told you what this is. This is all our arms are gassed and taxed. Hey, Philly, have fun with this. We don't know what's going to happen, and neither do you. Have fun.
Yeah.
We're gonna try to pull a fast one. We're gonna pull the wool over the
bases loaded. Yeah. 8 pitches in.
Good luck. Here we go. Here's Babe Schwarber swinging a drive.
So we'll see. This is a fascinating matchup now for the Mets. Definitely, I think the series to watch, the series of note is going to be that Mets-Phil series. That will be the 4 o'clock slate on Friday. Of course, with the other matchups, you got the Dodgers and the Padres in the late slate. And I believe the first one, and they put that Tigers-Guardians one at the graveyard shift.
Let's go. That's fine. Let's go.
Get
We're
out of the way.
For it, baby.
Get your game
get out
of the way.
Of the way. Wait till we see the Yankees.
Get the game out of the way.
Wait till we ruin the Yankees postseason.
MLB says, okay. Get this game out of the way. We have
interest.
That's fine.
Hey, Kyle, we'll be the Grim Reaper.
I'm
swinging my sheath over here. We'll be the Grim Reaper for the Yankee fans listening.
The Guardian, the MLB says,
no one wants him. No one wants him.
Stick him early, have him go against Big Noon or whatever the hell it is, and we have no interest. And then we'll put the real matchups, the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Mets.
Hang on, who did the Tigers just beat? Yeah. The team that's been there for seven straight times?
Yeah.
The AL Central, man, they're only there because...
The best part is everybody forgot about the Tigers because they almost won too easy. It wasn't enough.
They're only there because they beat the White Sox 12 times.
Yeah. It's a little protective of the AL Central. I can't knock you for having that perspective, but statistically...
It's just
I had to
listen to everybody before the year.
Statistically, it's there, but I understand you having that perspective.
Everybody before the year and during the year, all the no-names, please, MLB shows that I watch... I can't take these teams seriously. They play the White Sox. They're not even going to make the playoffs. And if they do make the playoffs, it's a fluke. Yeah. Hold that. Hold that, all you no-name, please.
Tigers, Guardians in Cleveland tomorrow.
Gas bags.
108 on TBS. Mets at Phillies on Fox 408. Royals at Yankees 638 also on TBS. Bob Costas will be on that game. Padres at Dodgers to finish off the night 838. First pitch on FS1. That's a packed slot. For a week, where there's not a lot of great college football, we'll get into the slate a little bit next. There's not a lot of great college football. This is the day the MLB needs, which is why I don't think it's a problem that there wasn't a game today. Probably because of the scheduling reasons, you need to give the wildcard teams a break.
It's Friday night, though. It's the weekend. People are excited. Work's over.
I like the anticipation. I like the let it boil over. No. I like the send good news being the dominant part of
today. Here's the thing, though. Colin, you and I like it. All right? We're baseball snobs. We love baseball. Everyone else, it's like, oh, yeah, we had a great game last night. What's on tonight? Oh, what? Nothing's on? Why isn't anything on? People are asking that today.
Maybe.
The average baseball, or rather the casual baseball fan is probably asking
that. I do like the anticipatory factor. Wow, good word about Colin. Anticipatory factor in waiting a day in between and making sure that these wild card teams do not run out of gas. I know most of them, other than the Mets, really, 1-2. So there's a little less that you have to worry about in terms of rest. But for the Mets' sake, I'm glad they're not playing tonight. I think they would have completely run out of gas, a la the Braves against the San Diego Padres. But that is going to be one of the most chaotic series that the MLB has to offer, is that Mets-Phillies series. Now, the real question lies in terms of magic. Now, the question was in the wild card series, all right, who could get their feet wet? Who could get past that first round?
Right.
But now, it's to the point of last year and what we saw last year. Can the teams that just had a week off pick up where they left off? And Steve Phillips, who we had earlier on the week, said if it was me and we had that time off, I would manage the hell out of these guys and play it like it was a real game 162 and you were in the playoff race instead of taking it easy, off foot off the gas, in order to maintain that sort of competitive fire so they don't get rusty. Now it's a question of, are these four teams now going to come out a little flat, a little rusty, and look like a team that took off a week off for the first time since April?
This is the year where I plan on making a decision if I like the time off or not. Is that fair?
If it's two,
is that fair?
1 year could be a fluke. 2 years is a pattern.
Agreed. And then I personally wouldn't be shocked if the Dodgers get bounced by the Padres. I'm not going to be shocked. But hypothetically speaking, let's say the Dodgers get bounced again. Let's say the Yankees stub their toe and baseball is in a nightmare situation in their eyes, in a sense of you're going to have small market teams in the playoffs and nobody's going to be watching anymore. I think you're probably going to have to change this.
Yeah.
Because it seems like if you ask any manager, and Phillips said this, if you ask any manager, like, do you want the rest? Absolutely. We earned the rest and this and that.
If you ask any fan, they'd probably say the same thing too.
Right.
Now you're almost in your own head.
Agreed. And I plan on making my decision on this year. And now that I even, like, Colin, selfishly, I have a team. Right? I have a team that had the week off. We won our division. If the Guardians come out and they stink against the Tigers, who they were historically pretty good against for the last 2 years, and they lose the series, yeah, man, I'm going to be crying, it was the time off, it was this, the Tigers, Scooble, Tigers' hottest team. You know, what are the cliches? Hottest team to end the year in baseball. They proved they could win big road games in Houston while we were on our butts.
Yeah. And is that going to be a problem? You'll know.
Baseball, it will be a problem.
I think you'll know in the first five innings of every game.
Yeah.
Whether that's going to impact the team or not.
The Guardians have hit Skubal well. I texted.
It's not even about that anymore.
I know. That's what I mean.
It's not about that.
Because I texted my buddies. I'm like, guys, I'm very worried for Skubal because I hit on my, I think I'm going to hit on the Cy Young with Skubal, Colin. I did a future on Skubal. And I texted my buddies. I said, did I jinx us? You know, I know I said I don't believe in jinxes. But I go, did I jinx us with this Skubal? And they go, Riz, we've been able to hit him for 2 years. I said, guys,
This is different.
Yeah.
This is different.
The playoffs. We haven't played.
There's different blood flowing through the veins.
And the last time I saw us play, we lost to the Astros twice. And I know you guys, they meant nothing. We already won the division.
Well, the fact that they meant nothing and they didn't play hard, all of a sudden, hold on, guys.
And like, now you just, and Colin Olson,
it's a week off.
And now you got to shift gears into the fourth gear. Can you do that from being a neutral? Can you go
after not having any time off all year?
Can you go to gear number four after sitting in neutral?
That will be the story of the weekend, is whether these teams that have the time off, if they could circle around and get their marbles in order to play some postseason baseball against a bunch of teams that are hot. The Padres are hot, the Tigers are hot, the Mets are hot. And the Royals played well. I wouldn't call them hot, but they played well. Situational baseball. Mike Rizzo, what's Coors Light going to be doing this weekend?
Folks, you got to join our good friends at Coors Light and the ESPN West Palm Street team for a fun Saturday of college football. Join us for the Coors Light College Football Game of the Week featuring UCF and Florida. UCF and Florida, two, you know, local-ish teams. UCF and Florida got a lot of Gator fans in the area. Listen, if you support the Gators, I know it's been a tough year. But we're going to have a lot of fun with the ESPN West Palm Street team at Charlie's Bar and Grill in Stuart on Saturday. Once again, Florida fans, Knight fans, UCF fans, Florida fans, Gator fans, Knight fans. The ESPN West Palm Street team will be at Charlie's Bar and Grill in Stuart on Saturday, October 5th, tomorrow, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. They got $10 pitchers, $14 buckets, and ice-cold Coors Light. You could show off your tailgate toss skills for a chance to win prizes featuring your favorite Florida greats. And always courtesy of Palm Beach Autographs. You got to be 21 or older to participate. Molson Coors reminds you to please drink responsibly. Once again, folks, one more time for you. Tomorrow, this Saturday, UCF and Florida are in action, and our street team will be at Charlie's Bar and Grill in Stuart. Tomorrow, October 5th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. We'll see you there.
Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. Coming up next, we're going to give out our most intriguing matchup of the week. Who's on statement watch and who's on upset watch on the NFL side of things? In week 5 slate coming up this Sunday, it's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Kodai Senga starting tomorrow for the New York Mets against the Philadelphia Phillies against Zach Wheeler in Game 1. The NLDS in Philadelphia, that will be a 4:08 tomorrow on Fox. No MLB games tonight. Mets, of course, won in dramatic fashion yesterday against the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers choke again. I swear, these Wisconsin sports fans. It's every sport in some capacity every year. Colossal disappointment. That's what happens.
Well, at least they won with Giannis.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
One thing about that is it's a double-edged sword. If you're good in every sport, you're due for some utter collapse. And that, I think that's what the Wisconsin, Milwaukee, that area of fan has to deal with, because teams like the Packers are always good and the Brewers are usually always pretty good. And the Bucks are always good. And even if you want to bring up the Wisconsin Badgers, a team that should be pretty good. And they all just, at some point or other, at least it's not perennial terrible, right. They're the worst team in the league. They're good, but they just, for some reason, can't get over the hump. I've always found that fascinating.
As a Buckeye fan, Colin, I fear Wisconsin at Camp Randall when they had Brett Bielema. I can't lie. Those games were always tough. Even when Urban Meyer was with the Buckeyes, some of those games we escaped by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah.
Since Bielma left, though, I have not been afraid of Wisconsin,
but, yeah,
honestly.
But the for some reason, I agree with this, but just as a whole, Packers are always good, but they're always in the mix. They're always edging closer. That 49er game last year, the Buccaneers a couple of years ago, the Cardinals a number of years ago.
Colin, I'm never going to feel bad for a Wisconsin sport fan.
I agree.
I will never.
That's my
point. I'm sorry, man. If you expected me to sympathize over tears from Green Bay Packer fans who consistently win 10 games and are in the playoffs and have a chance to win, you're out of your mind. You're a Jags fan. I'm a Browns
fan.
That
segues into the point.
I'll drink those tears.
The Milwaukee Brewer fans are, you know, sopping around,
please,
moping. Oh, this always happens to us. It's always heartbreak. Save me the trouble. I don't need to hear this garbage. You guys are good in every sport consistently. And you won a title 3 years ago in a major sport. I know the Brewers have never gotten over to the hedge. And I know the Packers, it's been a bit. But the idea, you're in it every year. There's teams that don't even sniff it.
Right. I'm waiting, Colin, for the resurgence. Speaking of the Brewers, quickly going to baseball. I'm waiting for an NL Central team that's not named Milwaukee to make the playoffs. Because I think you'd have a better chance of winning with a Cardinal or a Cub. The Cubs fought well at the end of the year. If they didn't go on that incredible skid of, like, what was it, the month of June?
Were hot, and then they got really cold.
Early on, they had a great April, but, Colin, they had a miserable May. May.
And they got hot in July for a bit, and then they got cold again. They're weird to shake.
I don't know. I thought they probably would have fared better with their pitching than the Brewers.
Maybe next year, Cincinnati with Terry Francona.
I knew you were going to go
running the team. Officially announced that Francona, coming out of a short-lived retirement, taking over the Cincinnati Reds as head manager.
That's just wrong. I thought
it was a health thing.
Now what happened? I thought, and I will never speak ill will of Terry Francona. He's my favorite manager of all time in baseball. Colin, I thought we should build him a statue. And now, since you're going to Cincinnati, I don't know if... Colin, we don't like Cincinnati. I know that is hard for people to believe, but like Clevelanders, we don't like Cincy. We don't like the Reds. We don't like the Bengals, man. Yeah. You can't do that. I don't know if he gets his statue anymore. If he has success in Cincy too, Colin... Say he brings them back and they like win something. I don't think they're winning anything.
He was in Boston. He went to Philly. I don't think he cares.
Terry's a great manager and a great person. But Colin, I'll tell you what. I woke up sick to my stomach this morning seeing that news.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this decision here. If it was a health thing, why are you going to a team that's going to be middling in the 80s in terms of win total next year, and that's going to have
pitching. They have Hunter Green and Lodolo.
Right.
They can't stay healthy.
But no, and it's just a middling lineup. This is not going to be a walk in the park to 100 wins. And all of a sudden, a guy who, you know, the health issues, need to take it easy. He needs to be on a beach somewhere. You're going to an up and coming, let's rebuild some blocks here at a team that's going to be scrapping and clawing for a playoff berth. That to me doesn't make any sense. I don't know why he's coming back in that sense.
What doesn't make sense to me is why the Reds aren't better. They have young hitting. They have young pitching. They have decent enough bullpen arms. Who's the guy who throws 1,000 miles an hour for them? His name is slipping me. He's their closer. But, they should be better than they are. And I have a lot of Cincinnati fans going to college in Ohio. Like, they're asking themselves the same thing after the end of every year. They got all this young hitting, and maybe you trade one of those young hitters for more bullpen arms or pitchers. But getting back full circle with the Brewers, Colin, I would like to see another team not named Milwaukee come out of that. I think the Cardinals are more of a fun team and a richer tradition. I think the Cubs...
I think the Cardinals are on the downslopes here, especially. Yeah,
I mean, Goldschmidt, the problem with them...
Goldie's out, yeah.
The problem with them, Goldschmidt and Arenado are on the back nine. They don't really have...
I think they're going to get rid of Goldschmidt, too, but yeah.
They don't... Well, his contract's up, too. They don't really have any starting pitching, in my opinion, that's... worth like freaking out about.
I took that under as a good pick.
And also Sonny Gray, like that was their big signing in the offseason. Sonny Gray's going to be done in 2 years. He's on the back nine of his career.
So
you don't have the young.
The ultimate part. This is a strange move for Francona.
Big time.
Strange. You've won. Go to a beach.
He's going to a rival. Why are you going to Cincinnati?
Do the Guardians and the Reds have that much of a rivalry?
We can't stand each other. It's the Battle of Ohio. We battle for the cup every year. Jose Ramirez.
Not the same league, but I understand. It's like,
Kyle, Jose Ramirez, when we beat them to secure our playoff spot and winning the division, Jose Ramirez had the Cincinnati is in Kentucky. Because, Colin, guess what? Cincinnati is in Kentucky.
Yeah. And I understand this. But, you know, Francona's managing a bunch of spots. He was with the Red Sox. He was with the Phillies. He won with the Red Sox. So I understand. But I understand why a Clevelander would be upset.
We're sick to our stomach.
I don't know. It's not even that. It's not even the decision of where he went. It's the idea that you did come back. Like, go.
Right.
And you're a Hall of Famer. Go hang out on a beach.
He was supposed to be like an advisor for us, too. He like was going to have a role within our organization. He didn't want to stay away. And now, like, it's, you know, it's all this. Colin, if he would have won in 16, I wouldn't have cared. I'm just worried that he could possibly win something in Cincinnati.
I'm not sold on that. I think you're higher in Cincinnati. I took their over, and
it's not
screwed.
That I'm higher on Cincinnati. Terry Francona is
a
notorious winner.
It's great
and wherever
he's
goes, Colin, he doesn't lose. Say what you want about how the Guardians folded to the Yankees every time they played the Yanks in the playoffs.
He gets them there.
We don't lose. You don't lose under Terry.
You get it. He gets you there. So it's an interesting hiring to take the lease. I mean, I'm okay with him coming back. I just think the decision-making behind the process, I don't understand. Mike, what do you got to tell for us?
I'll tell you what, Colin. Kaiser University is what I want to talk about with you. They are the school of champions. All over their gym, you could see scattered across the walls championships in a lot of sports. And let me tell you how many. 22 national championships, including back-to-back national championships in men's lacrosse, 3 straight NAIA women's swimming and diving titles, and of course, the football national championship that happened over last year. And once again, you could hear myself and Cyrus Witten on the call for Kaiser Seahawk football. I'm the color commentator. Cyrus is the play-by-play guy. You can listen to us for all of their home games, folks. Kaiser University has it all. And they also have captured 61 regular season and 63 conference tournament titles, plus a Learfield Cup trophy. Get the latest on Kaiser Seahawk Athletics at KUSeahawks.com. That's KUSeahawks.com. And also internationally, she's on the flag football team. The ladies made it all the way to the national championship
big
game
star.
Last year.
She's a big star.
They got a lot of hopes for their flag team again this year. Let's hope they can win the title. But Kaiser University, folks, remember the name. Kaiser University, our Seahawks.
Russo and Rizzo continuing live here. We'll give our statement pick, upset watch, intriguing matchup, and the best quarterback matchup of the week. Coming up next, it's Russo and Rizzo live here at ESPN 106.3.